Steve, you didn't blow away.
No, but we almost did, man. It was windy.
I woke up and saw a couple of videos. I was on the fence about Saturday and was gonna come and saw a couple of videos of people's flags flying, literally flying, and then also saw some porta potties that were knocked over. So I'm glad. I think I'm glad with my
Yeah,
decision.
I think all the people that I saw that must have had the smiling pictures must have had weights in their shoes. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it was crazy.
Anyways, well, I'm glad you didn't blow away. So, this is the Stuff Summer Says podcast
Steve.
with Steve. Steve, we are going to talk about this weekend's Blue White game. But we also have a great guest, Katie Kemmerer, who is the director of business operations for the Kansas City Chiefs, joins us. She's a proud Penn State alum. Really interesting to kind of hear a lot of the behind the scenes things that go on. So we'll spend some time there talking through that. Also had to ask her about her Penn State Twitter because she's got one of my favorite Penn State Twitter follows, I guess would be the best way to say that. So then we'll dissect and discuss the blue white game. Mainly one number that came out of the blue white game that we're both fired up about. And then there's some news that we should probably talk about, Keandre Lambert Smith. And then for the first time ever, I'm calling it a model UN of sorts, I think would be the best way to describe it. We will be the model TV executives. Is
Kind of
that?
a dictatorship UN since there's only one of us on each side, but sure, let's go with that.
Sure. Okay. And we will draft this year's Big Ten TV lineup, I think would be the best way to put it. So go ahead and take a listen to our interview with Katie, and we'll be back after this. Steve, the parade of former students kind of continues on the podcast, it sounds like.
Maybe that's why the bookers, well, I didn't book this one. So like we can't book double the
That's
bookers
true.
paid for this one. You actually did
I
some
get
work this
credit for this
week.
one.
There
I
you
get
go.
credit
Yeah,
for
there you
this
go.
one. Thank you. I'm proud of me. We are joined by proud Penn Stater, Katie Kemmerer. She is the director of business operations for the Kansas City Chiefs. She also happens to be one of my favorite Penn State Twitter follows. So, how are you, Katie?
I'm good. I'm honored that I'm one of your favorites. There's a lot of good ones out there.
We'll get to that. I have questions
Oh,
on that,
God.
so we'll get to that. Steve's already rolling his eyes. All right. What is the director of business operations? What do you do? How did you get that role with the Chiefs?
Yeah, good question. So, my role specifically is a little bit of everything, which I think is why I like it so much. So I always say I'm the jack of all trades. I don't really sit in any department. But basically my day-to-day is really working closely with the executive team and our ownership group and helping execute events or projects or anything organization-wide that is a priority for them. So most recently it's Super Bowl rings. Other things have been international, so putting the game on in Germany and kind of help spearheading that initiative. We own team branded fitness facilities that like the general public can go and get a membership to and go work out at. So putting and creating those gyms was another big project of mine I've worked on. So every day is a little different. I think it's what makes it so exciting, and I get to work with truly everybody in the organization, from coaches to scouts to finance. Which I think is really unique as you kind of look at the different NFL front offices. And I actually ended up at the Chiefs through a ton of networking, but all through Penn State alum, really. So Michael Signora, who works at the league office, I got to know him really well through some opportunities through the Curley Center and the Belisario College, which I always forget to call it that because it was not that when I was there. But through that, got to go to Super Bowl 52 in Minnesota. With Mike, and he brought me along to work on his team. And then when I was there, I met the Chiefs employees, and the rest is history. So I've been in Kansas City 6 whole seasons now.
Did you always want to work in sports? Was it that your intention?
Yeah, I think I started to put it together in the middle of high school that you could actually have a career out of it. I managed football in high school, aside from playing tennis and kind of playing my own sports and really learned the game through that and fell in love with like the business behind it. So I actually went into college as a broadcast journalism major and figured out very quickly I like being behind the scenes. So switched my major day one of college to public relations, and then kind of figured out where within the sports realm I fit because I feel like I've done everything a little bit on my way to this role.
What it sounds like your role is not just game day focused. Do you have what are your busy seasons? Is it always your busy season? What does your schedule kind of look like in terms of that?
Yeah, I think it definitely ebbs and flows. So I would say game day is actually more of an afterthought in my job, in my day-to-day. Game day is very routine and you show up and you know what you're doing and you kind of move on to the next game. So I would say my busy seasons really are about mid-season. We have one or two big events that we do every year that are a priority of ownership that I help execute. Playoffs are another really big one. So playoff into Super Bowl run, whether or not you're in the Super Bowl, to some degree, you're planning a Super Bowl and what an appearance could look like. So that's one of the things that I actually start working on probably the earliest in the building with a few other people as we kind of plan out what that would look like. And then really it's this time of year where it just ended. The league calendar is obviously different than the general population calendar. So we just finished our fiscal year 7 days ago. So we just finished business planning and budgeting and believe it or not, that's one of my busiest seasons. As we kind of look at everything we do holistically and where can we change it? Where can we better touch our fans? Where can we better touch female fans? Where can we save money but also not change the experience for other people? So it definitely comes and goes. And then when we win a Super Bowl, that's when I hit my absolute busiest because I do need everything tied to Super Bowl rings for our organization. So 1 week post Super Bowl, I was on a plane to go meet and talk about rings, and until we unveil them and have that ceremony, that's kind of the focus for the next 2 months yet.
So what does that mean? Like you went on a plane, you went to Jostens or whoever the supplier is, right, to talk about what?
Yeah. So it comes with the knowledge of doing it. I will say 2019 when we did it was totally different than now. Now we have a grasp on what we're doing and what timelines look like and all those things. So after we did it last year, we said, if we are lucky enough to do it again, let's start as early as possible with the design. Because the design process is the hardest part and it takes the longest, but it's also one of the things you have the least amount of time to do. So myself and our creative director flew to Jostens and met with them and sat in a room with their designers and their team that works with us and spent 6 hours there going piece by piece, stone by stone on the Super Bowl ring to put that final couple designs that we came up with in front of ownership and our executive team and get that first round of feedback to keep the process moving. And so it's really that it's staying on top of the design process, but then it's every person in the organization who gets a ring. It's making sure they get size. It's making sure their name's spelled right on the side of the ring. It's making sure they're getting the right ring. And then working with our events team and our marketing team to kind of help put together what the ceremony will look like. And it's just basically managing people and timelines is really the biggest piece behind it. But it's again, it goes back to having to know and work with everybody. So it's emailing our general manager's team to make sure I'm not missing a player that they might have a ring that maybe wasn't on the Super Bowl roster, but they were up on a roster up until the Super Bowl or things like that. So it's all those different nuances that you're kind of checking the boxes on and thinking about because everyone else obviously doesn't have time to think about those things.
And I want to go back to the Super Bowl related. You said planning for the Super Bowl, like in the like midway through the season or third way, two thirds, what it's going to look like. What does the team control, or what do you? I mean, like for a fan, right? Like, okay, 2 weeks from now, it's this. This is the playoffs. This is what the run looks like because we know the schedule's set. So,
Yeah.
what are you worried about within that run that you're talking about?
Yeah. So basically, the league has a timeline that they want teams to follow and kind of start thinking through as you get, usually at the late December is really the timing of it. But you need to think through how many tickets you need for your staff. What's it going to look like in terms of friends and family that get to join? Are you hosting events? And if you are hosting events, who's the partner you're an agency you're going to bring in to plan the events? So it's really those pieces on a high level. It's also organizationally the budget that goes behind it. And then the reason it happens so quickly is you make playoffs. To some degree, you don't know what seed you are now until the day before wild card week starts. So by wild card, you should have all your answers essentially figured out because if you win wild card and then you win divisional, now those four final teams are on a plane to the host city to meet with the NFL and have to communicate all their decisions. So it's really, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you're waiting until the last 2 weeks to plan it, you're already behind. So you're going into some of those meetings with the NFL around divisional with pretty defined, concrete decisions already made.
Gotcha. Okay,
I'm
thanks.
this is super fascinating. I like that. I never really thought about it, but that, I mean, it also does make sense. One time I think I tweeted something and you were like, yeah, imagine having your livelihood depend on it. It related to like the Chiefs and the one of the maybe the Bills game this year. What is that like having your livelihood kind of rest on the backs of a sports team?
It's nerve-wracking, but I also think, like, to some degree, you meaning ourselves, you almost become the like defender of those people, because I don't really see, I see Patrick as Patrick, and he's arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he's also my coworker, right? So you get to know them as almost like coworkers, and you get to know their families the same way you get to know your coworkers' families. And I think that's the hard part, is it's still a business, and like once the season ends and guys go to new teams, those are the hardest times of the year. It's like the losses are hard, and the unknowing of what your seed might be is hard, and it's stressful, and you have to plan for every different scenario. But I think those are the things you can also prepare for, and if you're preparing for the success, or if you're the success doesn't come, at least you did everything you could. Where I think it's this time of year when guys are getting traded and you're saying goodbye to people, or you don't know who might be back on the roster and the organization wants them back, but do we have the money for it with the salary cap? I think those are the times where it's actually more stressful and harder to remember it is a business in the grand scheme of things.
Has it, I think one of the unique things is we hear you talk about the Super Bowl planning and even the playoff planning, et cetera. This isn't really happening for maybe the 31 other kind of cohorts in your group. Have you felt the challenges of being this good? Like, is there a challenge to the team being this good consistently?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's not getting complacent is the one big thing of no matter what is happening with the organization. And granted, our logo is thrust into a whole new scale this off season, or in this season, with everything happening off the field. But I think as long as you're kind of looking for those new opportunities, and I think we have an incredible organization that really doesn't get complacent and is always looking for the new opportunity. It doesn't make things as hard as they could be. I will say where you notice things getting hard, like on my side of the business, is international. For example, we have this very successful game in Germany, and now we're asking teams for advice for maybe other markets, and teams aren't always inclined to give you advice because you're the Chiefs and they don't think you need it. So there's a little bit of this like competitiveness, even with the business staff. So like, no, you can figure it out. Like, we'll give you a little bit, but for the most part, I think it's just not getting complacent is the really big thing that we're challenged with, but also that we don't want to become complacent with. Like, we don't want the back-to-back to just be like this thing that they did and move on from. Like, how can we make back-to-back Super Bowls be the storyline even that carries through the next season? So I think those are the things that we're constantly trying to challenge ourselves with. I think there's challenges with winning and losing. We haven't had an off season since really I started with the organization, because we've either lost in overtime in the AFC Championship or we've been in the Super Bowl. So being in the Super Bowl puts you behind already with everything you're doing. And then when you win it, then you're adding the extra work that goes into winning. So I think it definitely just depends on the year, but I think us challenging ourselves is really the most important part of all of it.
Yeah, and that's why the other teams don't have sympathy, right? Because like you didn't mean it that way, but you said being in the Super Bowl puts you behind, right? And the other business staff's like, yeah, what was you, right? So, right. So last fall, I think last fall in the class, my students had to pick, give me a social media win or a social media loss or like, but I forget what it was called, crashed and crushed, crushed and crashed. Somebody did, and the championship came up. In the crushed. So in Germany, the ship could you explain that a little bit? And my understanding was you had pretty big fingerprints on that thing, right?
That was one of my biggest projects I've ever done. We had a very good feeling we were going to be the designated team in Germany, which essentially means you're the home team. We started coming up with ideas in March already of last year, like what can we do? Because We had thought we were going to be playing in Munich. So everything we had kind of thought about and talked about really centered around beer halls and the like quintessential like cliche German experience. And Frankfurt is everything but that, is really the biggest piece we learned throughout all of it. So we did a few planning trips. I had been to Frankfurt the year before, kind of in case we go, let's see what it looks like. And the Main River is like the focal point of the city. It is, you can't go anywhere in the city without seeing it. And that was kind of the, okay, what can we do on the water to make a splash, is now the running joke. And someone mentioned a ship, and it just kind of rolled from there. And like championship was like an off the cuff joke that someone made, and it just carried. So I think the goal of it was to really bring like the Arrowhead experience to Germany. And even if you couldn't get a ticket to the game, you could still get to experience what it means to be a part of Juice Kingdom. So we had our Super Bowl rings there. We brought the Lombardi Trophy. We had alumni coming through and signing autographs. We had coaches come through just to see it. And then it kind of all culminated the end of the weekend with Clark Hunt, our owner, and Commissioner Goodell serving mulled wine to people on the ship and taking photos and really interacting. So that was kind of like the premise behind it. And then knowing it was like the first time a team had ever done something that big, we just played into get it while you can as much as we can. And I will say that the numbers that came out of it like quadrupled what we thought they were going to do. So I think like we had really high hopes for it, but seeing it come to life and be as successful as it was really cool for the organization, because when you like think about the world, Kansas City is not the focal point of anyone's mind. Like, it's literally in the middle of the country. People in Europe don't know where it is. So to see people all over Frankfurt then wearing Arrowhead logos and that kind of thing was the coolest part out of all of it. But yeah.
You said numbers. What numbers are you looking at? What's success? Maybe not even in that situation, but those types of numbers. What are you looking at as success metrics?
The biggest things for us were attendance, like what was the number of people that showed up, and then where were they from? So we really built it for the European fan, not the American fan, and I think it was like 80% of the attendees were from Europe. So that was win number one, is we touched a whole new group of people that normally don't get the crowd. For us, it was like the earned media reach and the earned media value, which we're talking billions for the reach, and then the value was in double digit millions. So those are things that I think it's hard to sometimes evaluate, like what a marketing or a PR play can really do. But when you think about the billion number and how many people are in the world, like, yeah, it's not the most reliable, measurable metric behind it. But to still think, I mean, it was in Daily Mail, it was in Sports Illustrated in every language that they have. So I think those were the pieces that were the big wins for us, that it wasn't just really Frankfurt media or like Kansas City media talking about it. It was the world media was talking about it.
Yeah, we should have had a headline writing class for you too. Like billions. And then you were like, yeah, but no, billions. Like you can just keep selling that. You don't have to slightly, all shucks that one at all. That's cool.
You work partly in the community, or at least sports teams are a part of the community. Why are they so important to community?
Yeah, I think I'll talk specifically for Kansas City. It's really the thing that I think fans here can hold on to. Kind of going back to what I said about we're in the middle of the nowhere. There's a nickname of people at Cowtown. Like, Kansas City is still a very up and coming city, but the Chiefs and the Royals and the teams that are in these cities give something that people can rally around, no matter what they like or no matter what they believe in. It becomes this kind of like uniting point for a lot of communities. And I think that is something that we can all kind of get behind, right? Like, I think it's similar to like the Caitlin Clark effect. Like, everyone was talking about women's basketball and her game and this game that was happening. And it's kind of the same thing. Like, everyone in Kansas City is sitting and watching the Chiefs play on a Sunday. And when we played in Germany, it was a 94 share for TVs in Kansas City, which is, it's unheard of for people to care that much about anything. And so I think specifically for the Midwest, but kind of around all of the NFL. Like, it's really the one thing that people can hold on to. It's an opportunity for people to just get together, and it's an excuse to get together. And it's even the same thing, like my friends and I say, it's like, oh, it's not NFL season. Like, we don't see each other every week. So I think that's why it's so important. But then I also think the opportunities that teams bring to their cities in terms of employment opportunities and the way teams can give back to their communities through nonprofits and players' nonprofits. And it really helps elevate and kind of bring cities together and bring awareness, I think, sometimes to issues that aren't always the most prevalent or at the forefront of people's minds in cities.
You mentioned it earlier. There was extra sets of eyeballs on the team that maybe weren't necessarily from the sports fan this year. Of course, thanks to certain someones, I guess would be the best way to put it. What was that like? What was the Taylor Swift kind of Chiefs era so far like, from your side?
Yeah, I think I still like remember finding out she was going to be there and trying to like play it cool that she was going to be there and like not tell anybody because obviously you don't want it getting out with how big of a deal it was. So I think for me it was seeing kind of the ripple effect like in the stadium when people realized she was there, but then also having so many friends that could not care less about the NFL, like being invested in the NFL was really cool to see. And seeing all these stories of like little girls and their dads watching games, and like that was me, but it was for very different reasons. But it was like I learned the game from my dad. So now watching this whole new generation kind of take in the sport because of her, I think was really cool. And I think Kansas City as a whole was like the perfect city for her to kind of fall into. It's a town that like doesn't really care, if that makes sense. Like, we don't care if you're Taylor Swift walking down the street. Like, people will to some degree give you your space and let you just be a human. And I think as a whole, that's been kind of the coolest thing for like us as an organization, is she was at our post-game Super Bowl party and she brought all of her friends, and it was just Travis's girlfriend is here and we're gonna let Travis's family and friends enjoy this evening. Like, there was no extra kind of special moment that she was there. It was just she was one other player's girlfriend. So I think the cultural movement that kind of happened behind it of her bringing people to the game, and we saw the data from her being at games. It's crazy the effect she had, but I think it's so positive that all these people are now engaging and care about the team and the sport as a whole because she cares about it.
Hey,
Any
Darian, that was
better?
Travis Kelce's girlfriend, not Ross Travis's girlfriend.
Correct, correct.
Just
But
seeing.
best friend of both Taylor Swift and
The Ross
yeah.
Travis t-shirt from like one of the basketball games, I still have it. And I made sure our PR team showed it to Ross that like I still have the shirt. I'm not getting rid of it.
Have you, all right, I have to know, have you met her?
I have very briefly.
Okay.
But yeah, I post game Super Bowl
Okay.
party.
Well, what a hell of a way to meet Taylor Swift. I think one of the questions I have before we kind of get to the Penn State stuff, because I do want to bother you about Penn State stuff, related to kind of the Chiefs is in some ways, and this is just kind of me speaking out loud here, in some ways they've kind of become, because of Taylor Swift, because of Travis, because of Pat Mahomes, because of Andy Reid's like ability, they've kind of become America's team in some ways. How do you keep growing that visibility when some of this just kind of keeps falling in your lap a little bit? But I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but that's kind of sort of what's happening.
Yeah, I think so. I think it starts top down. The messaging, we're always supposed to be prepared for success, and we don't know what success looks like. And I think that's a it's a very nuanced kind of way of thinking, of just always thinking bigger than what you're really doing already. So, okay, we might not have the budget for this year, but if we do, what would we do in these scenarios? And kind of putting together and just always being ready, having the staff that you need to do it. Having the systems and kind of processes in place to be able to go and execute. But then I also think it's knowing when the moment is maybe becoming too much, right? So like maybe we don't need to post this right now because everyone's already talking about us. We don't need to take it to another level. We're never going to give ourselves a title, right? Like that's for everyone else to decide what they think about the Chiefs. But as long as we keep doing what we're doing, and as long as the business staff is prepared for the success on the field, and as long as the coaches are ready and prepared for what the scouts are going to get them at the draft. I think it's kind of this triangle that the organization has where we're all supporting each other and we're all ready for whatever the next side of the business is going to toss to us. And it seems to, as long as we keep doing what we're doing, it seems to be working pretty well.
In terms of like, you touched on all the stuff you kind of touched, there's just so many pieces, but in touch of like, in terms of like crisis or stuff that comes up, like what's yours or what's like the PR team's, like say, I don't know, like the referendum results or something else, like those aren't the ownership imperative. Well, they might be, right? Like, so how do you balance that stuff, right? There's all this wonderful stuff, but then there's a couple other things you're like, oh, gotta deal with that too. So how does that fit into what you're doing with? Because that's not in the plan, but it's now something you gotta play with.
Yeah, I think it's being ready to pivot. I think there are announcements we have changed with an hour's notice because of something that might break. So I think it comes back to communication is the biggest piece. And I think you hit it. That really comes from our PR staff. It also comes from our coach and our GM and our president of when we should or shouldn't be posting something or when someone should or shouldn't be commenting or on something or let's just go dark on social for a couple hours. So I think it's the trust that all the different sides of the businesses have in each other to be able to stop something if it's already in motion or to be able to change something at midnight if it was supposed to go at 5 a.m. if that's what it takes. But I really think when thinking through all the different pieces of it, it comes back to just communication and the trust to communicate to the right people to make sure we're doing what's best for that moment.
Gotcha.
What's your biggest advice to Katie 10 years ago or so?
Ooh, good question. Definitely change your major. And senior year is going to be exhausting, but do it the same exact way.
Okay. All right. I like that. All right. You are probably the best person to ask about this because you are a neutral party in this question, I feel, because you are employed by one and have a degree from the other. What's louder, Beaver Stadium or Arrowhead?
Okay, so technically it's Arrowhead, but it's because of the way it was built. But I would say like Whiteout Michigan game where they took the timeout before the game even started, like that was pretty close. I think we need like there needs to be some sort of measurement that happens. They're also loud for different reasons. Like Arrowhead just drops down where I think the fan noise with Beaver Stadium really fluctuates. So I think if we could top it off a little bit at Beaver Stadium, it drops some sound and break that record, no problem.
I joked that you are one of my favorite Twitter followers, but you are. That's not a joke that you are. I'm just going to anoint you this, but how did you kind of become the queen of Penn State Twitter? Like, how did you grow your little Penn State following?
I honestly don't know. It was like one or two tweets getting picked up by accident. I think that really, I just got a lot of random followers. And then when I did work for Penn State Athletics, I was the men's tennis SID, but I also helped on football. So there were times that like, men's tennis things were coming out of my account or things like that. So I think it just kind of happened by like one or two tweets getting some traction and then the men's tennis component of it and the rest is history. I had a few coaches follow me from when I worked at, when I did coaches video for Penn State. And I think that also kind of got eyeballs in front of more people, but I still don't really know.
Okay. All right. At least you're honest that way. I guess the last thing I'll leave you with or ask before we kind of get to we also have our quick questions is, you know, what's one opportunity that you're glad you said yes to? What is the one thing that you over the course of your career didn't back down from or didn't say no to that you're glad you took on?
Yeah, I think it would be doing coaches video for Penn State football. So I applied to it and never turned on a camera. I still don't know why my boss hired me, but he did. It was kind of all these like weird things had to align for me to have that opportunity. And I knew like realistically it would change my entire college experience. I wouldn't be able to tailgate at games. I would be working essentially a full-time job on top of going to school. I was the vice president of Austin at the time and I was in all these different clubs. So I think it was, do I actually have the time to balance like going to winter workouts at 4 o'clock in the morning, going to a full day of class and then still having to go in back to practice after class to do more work and some of those pieces. But I really think that having that on my resume is what got me my opportunity to intern at the Steelers for a summer. And that's what got me to opportunity to work on the Quiet Sundays documentary. And it was all these things kind of spiraled because of that one yes with Penn State football. And then honestly, like it was the season I worked for them was the season we won the Big Ten championship. And there it was the most fun I've had in a season at that point. And honestly, still like it rivals up there with Super Bowl season. So I think I would say yes to Coach's video a million times over, even though I don't think they used any of my footage that I shot because I didn't know how to use camera.
So wait, how many
Yes.
rings do you have?
So I have Big Ten championship from Penn State, the Rose Bowl loser ring from that season. Then I have the 19 Super Bowl, the 2020 AFC championship, and then the last two Super Bowls, so six.
Jeez, that's do you wear them ever?
No,
No.
I will wear them at the ring ceremony and then they'll go back away until we do it again.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Katie, he
All
asked
right.
about 10 years ago you, and you mentioned about that opportunity doing film, and then as part of that, you talked about you were in Awesome. So there's a whole cadre of awesome women in this club, Association for Sports Media, Women in Sports Media, who are trying to do some of the same things you are now, right? Then they were then and they are now. And that's just them, let alone with the other kids that are students that are coming up through or people who are interested in the industry. How come, and this competitive question is my question. I don't know why. It's been lately my question. How competitive is that? Like, I mean, you're good at what you're doing, it's working, but there's probably eight different people who would love to have your job tomorrow, right? So, like, how aware of you are that, and how competitive is the industry you're in?
I think it's competitive, but I don't think it should be so competitive that you can't help open doors is kind of the way I looked at it. Like, I think you need to be competitive enough to know that you are replaceable and that if you aren't trying your hardest or if you're not giving your full effort, things might not go the way you want it to. But I also think there are men and women that open doors for me. I hope to continue to help open doors for men and women. And I think that's kind of the biggest lesson that I wish I had learned sooner in college is you don't have to compete to the point of anger with every person
Right.
that's interested in the same thing. And you're actually going to benefit more if you work together. And a girl in Awesome is the reason I got the men's tennis internship at Penn State. A girl in Awesome is the reason I got the internship at the Steelers. So I think it's the more you can support each other and say, hey, I saw this opportunity. Hey, I saw this opportunity. Do you know anyone? And it's still things that happen today with friends looking for new opportunities or girls in Awesome trying to break into the industry. I think it's knowing that you're always replaceable, but also knowing that you wouldn't have got to where you are without someone opening the door for you.
Gotcha. Thank you.
That makes sense. All right. Our rapid fire questions we like to end with. What's your go-to creamery ice cream flavor?
Ooh, coffee break.
Feel like coffee break's been we've been trending on that answer a little bit lately. Okay. You are the czar of Penn State sports for one day. What's your big change?
Ooh. Move basketball permanently to rec.
This is
And
now the.
move
Ooh, okay. She takes it a step further. Yeah, this is now the second or third person that we've heard that answer from. So I'm glad to hear we're not alone there. And then you're back in town for one night and one night only. What bar are you walking into?
pickles, but we'll end up at the first, whether or not I want to.
Good answer. Good answer. Whether
There's
or
truth
not I
there.
want to. Yeah, no, that's, yeah,
Truth
there's
there.
definitely truth there. All right, Katie. I guess normally we offer this opportunity for people to plug things as people know you from the Chiefs. Where can they find your Twitter? What else should they know about you?
Let's see. My Twitter is nonsense, so don't follow it for anything too serious. I'm a big wrestling person, so if you like wrestling, there's a lot of that there too. But just I hope people can still support the Chiefs even if they're tired of seeing us in the Super Bowl.
There it is. It's there. She just had to twist the knife a little
Was
bit.
just a little subtle.
Yeah, just a little subtle. All right. Well, thank you very much, Katie. We really appreciate this. Really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's good to see you both.
Steve, I think the one thing, the main thing that I took away, and I feel like this has come up multiple times with kind of similar people in Katie's position, Just putting your foot in the door and going for it and like not saying no and not backing down. And look at where that's put Katie, and now she's got all these damn rings. That's it's pretty impressive and pretty unique. And I know one of us gets paid by a certain college. This one, the current one speaking, does not. And I think that college deserves a little bit of credit for that. I think without the opportunities that a lot of Penn Staters get, I think with it's it, if you go to Penn State and you're not taking advantage of those, you're doing something wrong, because you can do big things in what Katie's doing. I think the other thing that was interesting to me was the behind the scenes stuff of the Super Bowl. Like I never really thought about it, but all the planning that goes into the Super Bowl, and obviously for the Chiefs, like they've had this run of making it a lot lately, but there's a good chance that you might not make it if you're the 11 other teams that make the playoffs, or however many it is now. So it's interesting to hear the planning and kind of the oh shit preparedness that kind of goes into all of that.
Yeah, I think the level of preparation doesn't surprise me. The timelines did a little bit, but then they make sense when you talk back through them. And I think that's something that people just don't get from the outside. Oh, they're going to get ready for this, and this is going to happen next week. And it's the Super Bowl every year, right? Oh, the players were giving them a day to figure out tickets and whatever else. That stuff's probably figured out before the season for every team if they know what they're doing, sort of. Like, here's our timeline, here's what's going on. And you've heard James Franklin talk about it through the years. Oh, we do a schedule for every bowl game, so we know what we're going to do if we were to get picked for that bowl game. And it sounds a little, overprepared, but I think that's how good organizations do it. So I think that, and I think Katie spoke to that a little bit about what they were doing. And to your opportunity point about students at Penn State and doing their communications, there's a through line. I don't know if it's an exact personality line, but kids that are smart enough to come in and get involved and just try stuff end up being successful. If someone comes and thinks, oh, they're just going to pour this into me, and in 4 years I'm going to be okay, that's probably not going to work. And Katie was on the ball early and asked questions and made connections and that kind of stuff. And now she's doing what she's doing, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I don't know, the thing that as we keep doing this podcast, that's kind of like it's been eye-opening to me, is just kind of perusing people's LinkedIns, is there are Penn Staters in a lot of powerful positions or important positions, particularly in the sports world. And I think kind of to advocate, if anybody that's younger out there, most of them just they will take the time to respond. Like, most of these people are very polite and eager and happy to chat with you. And I think I don't know. That would be kind of my sage wisdom advice for today. Anything else? Anything
You
else
would
from
not be
Katie?
wrong. No, that's it. There you
Okay.
go.
All
There's
right.
Katie's sage wisdom.
I'm glad that I got to talk about Ross Travis and Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift too.
There you go. And I'm sure everybody else is too.
Yeah, that'll help our numbers. We'll definitely help our numbers. Okay. Let's see. We'll start with the blue white game. Let's talk about that, and then we'll get to the other stuff on the old list here. Do you want to let's talk about the football aspect first? No, let's talk about the attendance number first, because
So
the
speaking
attendance
of numbers,
number is really bothering me. And then we will talk about the football aspects. So I was curious, as we mentioned, there were as we mentioned, I didn't go to the blue white game this year. Didn't even drive into town for the blue white game. Particularly because I saw the weather, and I was curious as to what the attendance was going to be reported or guesstimated or told to me as. And it was told to me as 67,000 people were inside Beaver Stadium for Saturday's scrimmage. And I don't know. I wasn't in the stadium, but I did watch pretty much the entire game on TV. I looked at pictures that people posted. You're telling me that
I'm not telling you.
Penn State Athletics is telling me that 80% of the lower bowl was full on Saturday. I don't believe it. I don't buy it. That would have made, looking at our dear friend Mike Pohrman, that would have made the blue white game, that this weekend's blue white game, the second most attended blue white game since 2018. And there's no way, with how crappy the weather was, with how screwed up the parking situation was. I'll get to that in a second too. They're like, what good does it do, as you said to me earlier? Like, what good does it do to overinflate that number? There's no reason for it. Done.
The attendance had not been on my mind or even a thought until you sent me the number. And then you sent me the number, and I'm like, well, why would you make up that number? Of all the numbers you could make up, if that's the case, if there were 67,000 people, there might have been 67,000 people in and around the stadium, right? And I didn't go over there because we're on campus, but yeah, there was probably 60 some thousand people in town, maybe close to 70 around the stadium at some point during the day, but not in the stadium. And if that's the number you're going to go with, then next year when they play Ohio State, the number should be 252,161. Like, I mean, it doesn't make sense. And I don't know it's insulting to fans and people who support the program for them to put a number out like that. I think it is. I just think it's disingenuous. And if that's what they're going to tell you about that, what are they telling you about other stuff? That's all. Like, it just tell us the real number. It's okay. Everybody knows it was windy and crappy and it's a practice.
Even if it's 40,000, like everybody collectively can point to that number and say, yes, like you said, the weather was icky, the grass was not great in the days leading up to, who wants to park in that? It feels very disingenuous, and it feels, as you said, disrespectful. And I don't know. Like, part of me like grapples with like, why do we even care about that? And part of that is just because this is what one of the things that we tend to talk about on this podcast of sports business and sports media, et cetera. But I do agree with your point of like, it just feels like they're pulling a fast one. I don't know what the exact word is, but it's just disingenuous to people that were actually there. Because everybody who knows that was there, or anybody who tuned in on TV, could tell that that was not an 80% full stadium, or a 70% full stadium, I guess would be the better way to put it, with what seats were closed off.
Yeah, and I guess the only way, just quick thinking about where it could maybe benefit, is right, you're talking to sponsors and partners. Look how well attended our spring game was, right? And if they're not looking at videos or whatever else, they're like, oh, okay, this many people care about you. Maybe there's that. But gosh, if it's that, then do you want to be that partner or whatever else that was sold that as a basis for your relationship? So I don't know. I just don't. 40,000, okay. And I'm not even, doesn't even, I don't even blink an eye. Okay. Yeah. That number's inflated, but it was a tough day. 67,000 is a lot of a number to make up. And if somebody wants to make that number up, what else are they making up about the program that they want me to support? That's all. That's where I go.
Well, and I think it would be one thing if last year they didn't report, like, I think last year they reported 65,000. So you're telling me last year, which actually was a better weather day, had more people in the, or less people in the stands than this past Saturday. I don't believe that. I think that's a good point about like the ethics and all of that too. Like, if I don't know, that just feels sketchy. Just feels sketchy to be like, hey, here's the attendance, and this isn't really what the attendance is. Like, obviously, like, I wouldn't base my business decision off of the blue white game by any means, but I don't know. It
But the
just
next
felt.
part, the next PR move by them will be when all the spring games conclude in 2 weeks and everybody reports attendance numbers. It'll be for the 10th year in a row, Penn State has had a top 15
Yeah.
attendance number in the nation for its spring game. It hasn't, right? Or at least didn't this time. And I don't know what the loss is by not being in that number this time. It's really okay to just be what you are, be good at what you are, and don't oversell it. And yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about it, but the more you think about it, the more I saw it. Like, it feels disrespectful. Fans are shelling out money to be there. They want to be a part of it. Let them be a part of it. Celebrate how they were, enjoy it, but don't BS them about what they experienced or what they didn't experience.
Okay.
Parking? Well, you didn't even park. So what are you fed
Well, okay.
about?
Well, no, I just think it goes back to the parking issue we discussed of okay, so two things. Number one, going back to this attendance idea, is there was a picture posted of the media. The media was posting pictures of the arrival from up top of the stadium. And you look out, and there's a lot of people there, maybe not a ton of people, but a decent number of people there waiting for the team to arrive. But then directly behind them is just a vast emptiness of parking lot because of this new parking rule that they wanted to test out. And I think if you want to get more people in there and actually have an honest number in the stadium, and you want to make a good experience and be about everybody in this whole 107K strong family idea, then why not let people park wherever they want to park and for a spring game? So that number one, it's easier for people to get into this and out of the stadium. Two, they get the experience, be up closer and kind of be right there at the action, as opposed to parking all the way out down in any of the cow fields. I don't know. It was kind of another one of those moments where, like, it was a very odd juxtaposition of a decent number of people and then no cars in the parking lot, because that's where all the rich floozies park and they don't want to show up for the blue white game, or they're showing up way later. I don't know.
Okay,
So
that's
that was a
fine.
parking thing. Okay, I feel better after getting that off our chest. Now we can talk about
Shake it out.
the football game aspect. I didn't learn anything, and I don't think you're supposed to learn anything. And if you are trying to learn anything, I think you're overthinking everything. So that's my take on the Penn State Blue White game this year.
Yeah, I was a little. I was going to say I was disappointed in the broadcast, but having talked to the broadcast people last week, I was excited, right? Because they knew what was going on, they had a clue, but it was all about whatever control the program was going to give them or access, and there was none, right? There were the sideline interviews that were okay, like check the box. I did the interview with these people, but a couple of times they missed the action on the field because of that. And if you're somebody who really cares, you wanted to see how somebody blocked against somebody else or tackled against somebody else. But also just a little disappointed in Penn State, right? Like, give them a little bit of different access. Give them something, right? Throw them a bone. Now, again, I don't know how much of that is they want to control stuff, their own stuff to share on their own channels or do whatever, but I assume where people were watching the Big Ten Network, then are gonna see it immediately on Penn State's channels. So yeah, there wasn't anything there. It wasn't a super stellar broadcast, but I mean, it wasn't a good spring game broadcast, I think mostly because of access. And it was just by the numbers. You know, Matt Millen was going to chime in on some things here and there. Adam Bredeman did the interviews with all his friends and people he knows. Coach Rhodes for basketball was one of the interviews. Like, I get it. It's a Penn State audience, but there's nothing else football related they could have done.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it's an infomercial, and I guess that Penn State didn't get more of that infomercial and just add just some eeny beady teensy weensy bit of access or different thing. I think would have made it feel better to me, and the game was what it was supposed to be.
I kind of wish, when she said that, I kind of wish we would have got more of the like what they're doing with the UFL, where like they're interviewing players like in the midst of the game almost. Maybe you don't necessarily need to give me like the radio call, but go over and interview, you know, a co like it, coaches aren't taking it that seriously. It's still practice. Like Tom Allen's running out on the field having fun. James Franklin was like talking to some random guy on the like in the backfield. Like I don't
The
know.
best start was like 30 seconds of the press box windows, right? With the looking for Colt Nicky, I guess. I'm like, well, just talk to him before the game and show us the interview then.
Yeah.
Like trying to get it. That's the difference between a spring game and a real game. Don't even use that shot of him up in the press box because A, you couldn't see him because maybe there were new windows in the press box. I saw something that from somebody. Maybe it was just windy and they had him down. I saw somebody else sharing that on social, like a picture of the windows. And it was like, if you know, you know. So I assume maybe it was windy and that's why they were down. But either way, trying to see the coordinator through the go ahead and ask for the interview ahead of time. Do it. Hey, we caught up with him earlier. And then let him do his voiceover. Or, coach, what are the first two plays going to be? Right? Talk us through these first two plays and have the voiceover of the play. Something
Yeah.
different, anything. And it just wasn't.
I think that was kind of the broadcast was very much fine in my opinion. Like it served its purpose, and I probably wanted more out of it just because it's an opportunity to get more access out of it.
Right.
So there was that. Like I said, the stuff on the field, I'm not gonna invest or get too upset or too worked up. People were all fired up about Drew. I think if anything, like if you want to take anything away from that game, no offense to Bo Pribula, but you kind of saw why Drew is the starting quarterback and Bo is the number two. Honestly, the most impressive thing, and maybe it was just because he was going up against second and third string guys for the entire game, is Abdul Carter is a freakish athlete, and we're gonna experience that again. So those are like my
That might have been
only
the most
takes.
honest portion of the broadcast. Did you watch it all the way through?
Yeah.
The interview with Abdul Carter at the end?
No, I didn't see that. I didn't see that part of
When he
it.
talked about the move and like, you know, yeah, I kind of requested it. And why? Well, then, you know, better assess my skills. Don't have to think as much. Just get there and to get paid. Like, I appreciated the honesty.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know. It's funny. I just like, I know we kind of joke about like Trace McSorley and Bo, but like as I'm starting to see get like particularly like 2019 flashbacks to Micah. And I don't know if he's that good, but I think at least with Abdul Carter, like we all collectively knew the second that first season, like we're like, he might be different. Like he might be special. And I'm hoping that we see it that way. Okay. That's about it. Football, that football wise. And anything else you want to discuss about the game? Did you get creamy or ice cream? Actually, I do have one thing I want to discuss about the
I
game.
got creamery chocolate milk, not
Okay.
ice cream.
It's actually about
Go ahead.
the weekend.
Okay.
I heard you finished like 32nd or like pretty fast.
No. 32 minutes. It wasn't 30. It
Oh,
wasn't
it's
30
in
seconds.
32 minutes.
It was
Oh.
slow. It was slow. So I signed up for the paternal family Beaver Stadium run, which I've done pretty consistently since it started. I ran it the first 2 years. It was great. I think I was slower the second year because I actually had to stop on the route and go to the bathroom, like in an actual dining hall bathroom, not in the route. And then I'd signed up, and I don't think I'd done it since. But I figured it was my donation to Special Olympics. So what, you know, whatever else. So I signed up this year. A couple other people signed up. I was supposed to do like a church van thing to get college kids to church, and nobody rode the van that on Sunday, which was going to be my plausible deniability for not running again. And after I signed up, I didn't practice at all. I didn't run at all. So Danny was like, "So you signed up and you're not going to do it?" I'm going to do it. Nope, nobody's going to do this with me. So I'm like, "Okay, I'm going to run, but like, you may need to pick me up somewhere along the course. Like, it will be bad." So I ran. I didn't stop anywhere along the way. Got really slow at one point, and survived and finished. But yeah, like I had hopes for a little bit that I was going to run. And I was like, "Oh, screw it. Not going to be able to train, not going to run." And then Sunday morning at like 9:30, she's like, "Really, we're not going to do this." I'm like, "Okay." So my training breakfast the morning of was two little pieces of bacon. I didn't drink anything. I didn't eat anything because I didn't want to get whatever. Chugged through.
I'm proud of you.
So
I'm proud of you. I haven't somebody that's never done a 5K in his life. I'm proud of you. So
Talked to little Isaiah, who was getting pushed in a stroller by his grandfather, who went by me at one point down a hill. His grandfather
he
said, "It's
put
going to be hard."
then Isaiah got out and pushed you.
No, Isaiah was just talking. I'm like, then the kid, just a scooter went by, and I'm like, "Hey, scooter kid, that's Isaiah up there in the stroller. He's talking smack about you. You should probably try to catch up." So, yeah,
All right. Well,
it
I
was fun.
just okay. I'm proud of you. That even if you didn't weren't the most prepared.
No, one paradigm.
Okay. Well,
Which might be the same with this draft, because I'm learning now from your tease. I might have misunderstood the
we're not there
rules.
yet. We got something else to
Okay.
discuss. Well,
Okay.
patience, grasshopper. Jeez.
Okay, go ahead.
But yeah, I think we at least need to talk about it. It's of course the big news, which is that Death by Chocolate won the Creamery Scoops ice cream competition. No,
Aren't they a dynasty? Isn't it a
I think I just
dynasty?
say I think that's like I mean, and that answer anytime we ask that question on the podcast does come up pretty often. This is just a plug to get free Creamery ice cream. That's what we're doing here.
Or a sponsorship.
Hell yeah.
We ask a creamy question every time to a guest. We should probably be getting a
Yeah,
sponsorship.
that's true. That's true. No, okay. The big news, the real news of the week is that Keandre Lambert-Smith is in the transfer portal. Apparently, and I think this is now common knowledge, or at least it's been publicly or non-paywall reported on Blue White Illustrated, but he kind of had cleared out his locker over the last like week or so. I think the main thing that I'm wondering is why now? And why not in December or in the January transfer portal of why he didn't go now and wonder what changed. I don't know if Penn State personally, if I feel that Penn State is any worse off wide receiver wise. I don't know if they're better off. But it's an interest. This is kind of the first drama saga that we've had in the NIL transfer portal combo era that's impacted Penn State directly, that at least catching people the public's the non message board reading fan attention, I guess would be the best way to say that.
Yeah, like I don't think they're any better or worse, right? Like I think it's kind of hard for that receiver group to be worse in general. So maybe they'll be better. Maybe they'll get somebody else coming in the transfer portal. And I guess maybe he just couldn't, the writing wasn't on the wall in December that became more clear in the past month or so. So we'll see. I mean, there's just so much in that stuff that you'll just never know unless somebody asks at the new school, depending on how, and it'll depend on how clearly he wants to answer or whatever comes out later. And once it comes out later, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, that's one of the things about it is it's just, yeah, that person's gone, which is, both interesting that it won't matter at some point. And it kind of matters now, but doesn't. So yeah, I think it's just it'll be interesting to see if anybody follows him, right? Or what happens now, right? And the whole we've got to recruit our locker room kind of thing. If that does happen at this point, they've done a good job of keeping their people in general, it seems like, except for, and nobody really high profile, maybe except for this. So
I think,
yeah.
I don't know. I think I kind of said this on Twitter this morning, and it's kind of weird because, like, in some ways, in that specific department or that portion of the locker room, Penn State needs like a PR win, and I think they got that in a way with the Julian Fleming thing. But I don't necessarily think they're. I think you're just gonna have to shut up and wait until football season to kind of see that PR win, assuming everything kind of holds steady. Because I don't, they're over the scholarship limit, and like I know there's like some workarounds that they can do, but they still have to get some of those numbers down or find the workarounds to get those numbers or down. And I think you're just gonna have to kind of be patient. The other thing that I kind of keep going back to, and maybe the blue white game did reassure me this, is last year a lot of the offense ran through the tight ends. Tyler Warren was one of the top pass catchers on the team, and Theo Johnson obviously off to the draft, but by all means, by all counts, by what we saw between Khalil Dinkins and Andrew Raplia like this weekend, I think you at least see some semblance that those guys are still options, and that part of the passing game is fine with me. It's just kind of up to the quarterback to make sure he can connect with those guys, and we'll go from there. But I don't know. It's just been fascinating to kind of watch this first kind of all play out. Particularly, I mean, even James Franklin this spring was praising Keandre Lambert-Smith. Like usually, like he's a read between the lines guy, and he'll say one thing, and I think that's why he shouts out certain players at different times and kind of see it kind of domino effect all the way from where we were at the start of the, literally the start of the football season last year, all the way to this has been a wild journey.
Yeah, what would be nice if when we get to the point where the clarity comes on paying these guys, if clarity came on player movement too, I don't think that's ever going to happen, right? Like, oh yeah, his decision because he wasn't getting paid enough, his decision because we couldn't find a deal good enough for him, or whatever, or our decision because we thought we were going to be better and we're over the scholarship limit, so we encouraged him to go, right?
And I don't think we'll ever get that because I think recruit, like, that's the difference between recruiting and then in the NFL. Because I think in the NFL, like, you would get that or get more close to that.
Yep.
But yeah, that would be nice. I don't know. It just would be nice. Okay. That's all. That's it there. All right. Are you ready for our first ever television draft?
I've got to clarify because you said earlier, are we picking the Big Ten schedule or are we picking the Penn State schedule? Because I if
We are picking the. We are okay. Let me set up the scenario
okay.
for you and our listeners slash viewers. You and I have been promoted to TV executives. You are in charge,
Rightfully
Steve is in
so.
charge of Fox, and I am in charge of NBC slash CBS. It's so they can join to
Make the picking
weird
easier.
names. And yeah, make the picking easy. So you and I will go through here. We've got 10 games to pick. I'll put the order in the post. I'll put the order. But for those listening at home, we each have five games, but it's Fox, NBC, CBS, Fox, NBC, CBS, Fox, NBC. And then I gave Steve one curveball, which is a BTN game. He gets to pick the BTN game. So you can pick from the Big Ten.
Oh,
It's
so
any
any Big
game,
Ten game, we're
any
not
Big
picking
Ten
the
game.
specific. Okay.
We are just trying to build out the contract as is and pick which games we
And
want
if I
for the
pick
year.
from a week, you can't have something
Yeah.
from that week.
So like if you pick
Right. Okay.
like Penn State versus Minnesota for whatever reason is your first pick, I can't pick that game.
Okay,
Why
cool.
you'd pick that game, I don't know, but
Well, you wait till that first pick comes up then.
all right. So you are the TV executive for Fox. You have the first two picks. So go ahead with your first pick.
First pick, I'm going November 30th with Ohio State at Michigan.
That's good. It's the correct pick and pick that I think Fox will make and everybody else will make. The point of doing this
And it's going to
exercise
be at
is
noon.
yes, and it's going to be at noon. Pretty much all of your games are at noon. We're going to relatively keep all of the NBC games at 7:30. I think I may try to steal one CBS 7:30 slot, but we'll get to that point should it come up. But again, the whole point of this exercise is to enlighten you, the listener, on how this draft, we think this draft is done. Okay. So your first pick was Ohio State at Michigan. Your next pick.
My second pick is, what month is that? September 21st, early in the season. Am I going to do this? Noon game. No, I can't do that. Can
It's your
I? Yeah,
TV
but I
contract.
have. No, I can't. I can't do that. But by all rights, they should, right? So no, I can't do that. So let me see what I'm going to do. Because
I'm
that's why I
curious.
was.
Okay. I'll go ahead. Make your other pick.
Oh, am I going to do it? Where are they at? Where are they at? Where are they at? Where are they at? I'm going to take October 12th. Wait, is this a home game? Yeah, October 12th. Oregon at Ohio State.
I didn't even did I have that game on? Oh, I did have that game on my left. It's a yeah.
It's a noon
You,
game.
yeah. It's no, it's Ohio State at Oregon, I believe.
Oh, then I'm. See, that's my challenge with the West Coast games, right? Because
But
my
you're a TV
first.
exec, you can
No,
you
because they're not going to play it at 9 a.m. local, right? That's
okay.
the problem. So you're going to have those West Coast games to play with.
Not necessarily. You could also take a Friday night game. You could take a game for FS1. You're not going
Yeah,
to,
like I'm going to
but
waste one of my first two picks on those crappy outlets. There is no way. Well, then let's do this. Let's take the safe pick. Let's take Ohio State at Penn State on November 2nd, also at noon. I know. I know, but that's the right pick.
but I think that's probably the right pick in the process. What was the game that you were going to pick initially?
Michigan at SC, right? Aren't, isn't Michigan out at SC?
No, I think I have that the other way around. No, USC at Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
Well,
then
too
you can
late.
have it for whatever you want.
Thanks.
Make it a 3:30 game somewhere.
Okay. All right. So I have the next two picks. There's a lot of interesting games.
Whiteout's more, the Whiteout's better than Michigan. Yes, go
I
ahead.
wrote down a lot of these games. I did find myself only really paying attention to like the schedules in terms of certain teams, and I think probably will come up through this thread by the time all the names are out here. But I think for the NBC game, the primetime NBC game, I want the national championship rematch of Michigan and Washington. So I'm gonna take that one for NBC. And then for my first CBS pick, now you picked that game. I am, as a TV executive, going to push for Penn State to make the Whiteout game, the UCLA game. I'm going to take UCLA at Penn State as my CBS game so that I can make that my night game. It's my one CBS night game for the year. How do you feel
Okay.
about that?
I think that's going to be a night game. And there's going to be white involved in the stadium, whether it's a stripe
Stripe
out
out.
or a the rose or whatever that is. But yeah, that's going to be a night game. That's an okay pick. Or it could be 3:30 at that time of year, right? Because it's late enough in the season that
Yeah,
3:30 still
that's
looks like
true.
night.
Yeah.
So either one of those. Yeah. Well, then I'm going to go back. And since the defending national champions are home against the University of Southern California, for Fox's the fifth pick overall and Fox's third, they're taking SC at Michigan.
I really think that that's how this plays out. Like, I think I wonder if your second pick, which was Ohio State at Penn State, would be USC at Michigan, just because that is the biggest. I mean, those are two of the biggest brands in football. And
Could
even if
be, and
Michigan.
that could be the out for Penn State fans who don't want the noon whiteout, right? Is that if USC at Michigan somehow, I don't know how the picks are actually distributed amongst the networks, but if somehow Fox doesn't have, if Fox goes USC at Michigan for that at noon, then the whiteout becomes whoever it is, Ohio State or UCLA, it becomes more likely not noon. Right, because CBS would love it at 3:30, and NBC would love it at 7:30.
Yeah, I wonder if NBC is disappointed that they didn't get the whiteout. Well, they did get the whiteout. What am I
They got the
thinking? Did
stripe
they?
out. They got the closest thing to it, right? Like,
No, they did get the whiteout. It was the they got the because they got the oh no, what channel was the
was it
Iowa game was
CBS?
on CBS last year. Yeah, but it was at night. It was at night because I think they had an Notre Dame game. So all right, to review the picks so far, Ohio State at Michigan will be on Fox. Ohio State at Penn State on Fox. Michigan at Washington, UCLA at Penn State. Those are NBC and CBS respectively. And then Fox will have USC and Michigan in Steve's executive world. All right, I'm back on the clock. I'm gonna go. I think this will be the only time this team appears on this list. And really was the I think all of the schools have been mentioned. Maybe Oregon isn't actually listed out here, but the only school that isn't any of the schools already mentioned. I'm going to pick for NBC, Alabama going to Wisconsin, because why wouldn't I want the number one brand, even if they don't have their head coach? Because you got the rights to an Alabama game. I'm taking that as an NBC executive. Oops, as I copied that in the wrong spot. All right. CBS. I think I think I'm struggling with the CBS pick. I kind of feel like it probably is another Penn State game. It'll be Penn State at USC. But I could see that game being in prime time just because that's a major East school versus a major West school. So that would be my
Yeah,
thought
I
logic.
think that's the for Penn State fans who don't like noon games, USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington are not your friends, right? Because those games aren't getting played at noon on the West Coast. Their home games are not going to be played at noon Eastern. So there's an inventory that kind of shifts toward Penn State home games being at noon just because those games that they're going to be on the West Coast are going to be the later games if they happen, or when they happen on a network. So I think that's a challenge for Penn State fans who don't like early kicks. Fox needs another game, probably going to be a conference game just because, or a conference game that somebody's hosting. Oh, wow. We probably should have taken that. So Fox would take, if it's still on the board and early, Fox would take Notre Dame at Purdue at noon, right?
Well, I had that.
Do you have that date
No,
going?
I had that slotted in. So I have that over here on the side. I meant to suggest
Yeah,
those
so
roles. So I have any of these games I have kind of like automatically set, like auto defaulted. So I have the Notre Dame versus Purdue, Notre Dame versus USC, Texas and Michigan,
okay.
Colorado, Nebraska, Utah, USC, LSU versus USC. I wasn't sure, but I think that that game goes to ESPN. And then Kansas at Illinois was the only other kind of random one I found.
Okay.
So those would either go to Fox or NBC based on kind of their package rates.
Well, then they need it. And I don't know. Did we pick this date yet? Let's see. State. No, I don't think we've picked this date. Oh, yeah, we did UCLA. So UCLA Penn State is on a date when I would have picked an Iowa home game if I were Fox, because Iowa's home at. Let me look at the wrong list. Oh, no, I can take this date. I'm looking at the wrong list. Iowa is home against Washington. October 12th.
think you're,
Yeah, we don't have a
yeah,
Hustad
you're
Oregon
good.
picked up. So yes, I think they'll do that because an afternoon game at Kinnick, nobody ever loses. They rarely lose there. They get to do the wave to the kids. It's a first time Washington's been there. So yeah, that game.
Okay. I like that. I like that. All right, my last NBC game. I think I'm looking at the list of games that I have here left. I think I have to take the I think I'd have to take the Hold on, let me make sure we didn't pick that date already.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's
Yes, I'm going to take the Ohio State at Oregon game. Because that's the last of the kind of this new triad, which is really like a pentad of teams that are relatively interesting. So yeah. All right. BTN, your
I'm going
one
to take the
BTN
most
click.
big, I'm going to take the most BTN game possible. So how about Rutgers
Didn't think
at
they'd be on that.
Illinois on like November 23rd?
I didn't think they'd be on that, but I guarantee you that game will be on BTN.
That's what I'm saying. That's the BTN game.
Okay. All right.
Actually, your BTN, it will be so interesting to see how this plays out because there's more inventory now, right? And they're going to try to standardize noon, 3:30, and 7:30. And then BTN, it doesn't, there's not more broadcast slots, right? There's just more games,
Right.
right? Like unless they regionalize them. So it'll be interesting to see how stuff falls and where it falls too. So, I mean, I guess there's FS1. I guess there's multiple time slots the same time, the same day.
Right.
So yeah.
And Fox said that they're going to air at least some games on Friday nights on Fox.
Right.
And I would have to imagine that maybe they'll do
It'll be a game
US.
out west. It'll be a game. It won't be the
Yeah.
Big Ten. It won't be the traditional Big Ten games at home. It'll be one of them out at USC because who
Yeah.
cares, right? And it'll draw a number.
I think it'll be like a USC and let's say Illinois. I don't know if they played this year, but USC and Illinois, like that's a perfect Friday night game. You put that on Fox and then you put Boise and whoever else on FS1.
I mean, in 10 picks here, you had Michigan three times, which makes sense. You have Ohio State twice, three times. You have Penn State one, two, three times. I think those are right. I think Ohio State and Michigan, because the numbers don't show that the West Coast teams draw. They
Well,
just, against who they were traditionally playing. The
right.
Pac-12 teams playing each other don't draw numbers.
And I think a lot of the interest in the games this year, like even that Ohio State and Oregon game is, I think that's their first, that's one of their first like big, that's their first big conference game in the Big Ten era. Like I think that's the appeal to like even the Michigan the USC at Michigan. I think that's USC's first conference game. I think I, as if I was a TV exec, like I'm gonna try to have as many of those like strong and steady powers of TV numbers and then get them in the same way kind of we did here with like UCLA at Penn State.
Well, and to self-validate, right? Because why not? It's our podcast.
Well,
Like,
yeah.
as you look at picking 10 games, the sixth game that went off the board is Alabama at Wisconsin, right? It's Alabama. Now it's Alabama without Nick Saban. It's Wisconsin that nobody knows what they are. But that is a wonderful non-conference broadcast game at night, early in the season for Wisconsin, for everybody to see them jumping around and whatever else. And Alabama hasn't been north of the Mason-Dixon line since whenever they last played Penn State, so, but again, there's that much more intrigue before that, which I think is what speaks to the conference's power in terms of TV.
And even there's a couple games here like I didn't have we like USC at UCLA isn't that interesting to a national audience. And even Washington at Oregon, I don't think Washington's going to be as fun this year. Losing a head coach, losing kind of the star quarterback and wide receiver. I think Oregon, if there's any team that's not on here enough, it might be Oregon. But again, going back to your original point that how many people actually watch Oregon and maybe outside of Dan Lanning know who Oregon is. I think that's the big question mark. All
It'll be
right.
fun to see what the networks think. You know, what NBC wants to do with Saturday with Saturday nights, what CBS, which has that 3:30 spot, which has been the spot for college football in large part during my lifetime, because the SEC has done great things, and even before that, they put games there that matter. To see how it gets reshaped with his Big Ten team games will be fun to see.
It feels that CBS slot doesn't feel as exciting to me anymore.
No, not compared to the two. So, but it, especially since, yeah,
Even as a
it
Big Ten fan, it
right.
just doesn't, I don't know. It feels when I know that Fox, when I know that they are definitively third on the pecking order. So
Right.
maybe even fourth, because I feel like Fox probably usually gets a pick or two ahead of them. Okay. I know that was a very niche episode, but I hope you enjoyed it.
What
I hope
percentage do
you.
you think we might get right? 50? What percentage would you be happy with being correct on?
As the media, as a, we are both the media experts, of course. 100, because we're going to get them all right. I think.
If we get 100, we need to give, if we get 100, we'll have to give some listener something or do
I
something.
think we get at least four of these right.
Okay.
I think. I
Yeah,
think.
I think we're gonna bat 500 somewhere. I mean, I'd be surprised if it weren't.
The one
And
that I
we
just like, I feel like is greedy is the Alabama at Wisconsin, NBC taking that as opposed to CBS taking that, because I feel like it would make
the
sense
SEC, right?
the SEC thing. But like, if I'm an NBC executive, like I want that game.
It depends on where they pick it, though. If you're NBC, you might have to pick it early on before that, like or whatever. Because
Right.
I think if you're CBS and you see that on your schedule of non-conference games, that might be the one game you definitely do want at 3:30. That might be the first pick you make if you're CBS, even over the white. You know, I mean, depending on it would be so interesting to hear that to be party to, because if you're CBS, you've got all that goodwill of Alabama built up at 3:30 for years. I don't know.
But I think about it from like the marketer mind, and like my mind is like, I'm trying to get rid of the SEC era and I'm trying to launch into this new Big Ten era.
The biggest the market that watches most is that one, whatever that town
That's
is,
true.
you know,
That's
that they watch
Birmingham
with.
at
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Birmingham Tuscaloosa market.
Yep.
Okay. Well, hopefully that was an insightful exercise. We should do, I think we'll do this every year. We're doing this now because upfronts are early next month. So usually we start to get some times. And trickling out for them. Okay. Long podcast. Apologize, but we had a lot to talk about. So thank you to Katie for joining us. That was a great conversation. Very excited about that. Other than that, we've got a website. It's called stuffsummersays.com. On that website, there's a section called With
Steve.
Steve. I don't know if I'll write anything this week. We'll see. Just kind of feeling the week out so far. It's only Monday. Then we've got emails. Mine's Darian at stuffsummersays.com. Steve's is
Steve at stuffsummersays.com.
5 stars, thumbs up, all of that. Other than that, Twitter handles. Mine's at stuffsummersays. Steve's is
At Steve Samsel.
we're out of here. See ya.